say my name.
Is it the end of the world, Habs fans? I don't think so. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio. I'm Costa Poporius, along with my partner in crime, Mr. Stephen Hintle. Steve, how you doing tonight?
Very well. Better than Senators fans.
Yeah, well, you know, they're down 3-1. But, you know, you come to Montreal, the Canadiens lose one game, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, the end of the world.
Is it now? I think it's the end of the world if you're the Winnipeg Jets, maybe. As a matter of fact, it is the end of their season because they were swept. The Ducks got their brooms out, but the Montreal Canadiens weren't able to do it. The last time we met, the Canadiens only had a one-game lead over the Ottawa Senators. How far we've come in the short span of a week, and yes, maybe one loss has fans crying a foul, but I don't know about you, I'm just starting to get settled in for this playoff run because I'm getting the feeling, well, let's just say it's only beginning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Montreal played two games in Ottawa. They scored a single goal plus one in overtime. What is there to expect from the Montreal Canadiens? I mean, their top players have not started lighting the lamp just yet. They're getting a lot of goal support from their supporting players, and now it's time for guys like Max Pacioretty and David Desharnais, and perhaps even Alex Galchenyuk to turn it up.
Absolutely. I think it's time for the top flight scores for the Montreal Canadiens to kick it into the gear. You've got a lot of guys going for the Montreal Canadiens right now. Their lineup has seen contributions up and down thanks to the quality of depth Marc Bergevin brought on board. And one of the things we really got to focus on right now is the contributions that have got them the 3-1 lead. Yes, the other guys need to kick it in. Like I was saying, we're just getting going here for what we hope will be a nice long run. So those guys should also be starting to shake off the rust of the regular season. Max Pacioretty and Alex Galchenyuk in particular. Galchenyuk with an overtime game winner already. Pacioretty contributing a goal, but as we've noticed throughout our shows pre and post on the Montreal Hockey Talk Network, Max Pacioretty hasn't thrown a hit in this series. Now, I can't account for whether or not he threw one in game four, but he wasn't all that physical. You can agree with me on that one. And
absolutely,
the bottom line there is that you want the top flight scorers to become involved. If they're not throwing their weight around, if they're not generating chances, how can you expect them to get those goals that you want? Well, they're going to have to follow the lead of those guys doing the job on the third and fourth line right now.
Yeah, of course. And Michel Therrien today announcing that there's no lineup changes going into game five at the Bell Center. There's got to be something that has to be done about that power play, though, Steve. I mean, Sure, the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago without a power play, but they were the best team in the league 5-on-5. Montreal was not at the top of the league 5-on-5, although they managed to win their share of games, getting them 107 points on the season. What can the Canadiens do in the short term to change it around? Is it just a personnel thing? Because I think, other than, you know, always rolling the same two lines out on the power play, it's become pretty much mundane and just a one-trick pony with PK Subban at the point.
I don't even know where to begin in search of an answer for the foible the power play has generated. Every time you have a man advantage for the Montreal Canadiens, you are certainly, well, you're not engaged. You're not thinking that this is an opportunity for the Habs, and that's a problem because when you have the extra guy, the other team should be scared of you, and I can't say the Sens have been scared of the Canadiens' power play. As a matter of fact, I think the Canadiens are scared of their own power play, and I think that's become more of the issue. Why are they screwing it up more and more, Coach? Well, you tell me.
I think it's because they're gripping their sticks a little bit too tight, and they're trying to be pretty. I mean, the thing about any power play that you have, there's got to be a level of simplicity in it. There's got to be movement, and there's got to be shots on goal, and Montreal's looking for that perfect shot, and that's the biggest issue. I mean, they're looking for those long passes over to PK Subban.
Don't you think they're a whole lot like their fans?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, their fans are looking for that stuff like that. They want fancy stuff, but at the end of the day, doesn't it count more when stuff's on the scoreboard and not, you know?
It does, which is why I'm relaxed right now and not worried in the slightest, because the Canadiens, A, they are, well, they're in the pilot seat right now. They are in control of their destiny, 3-1 lead over the Senators, with the likelihood of dispatching them in Game 5 as they come back to Montreal tomorrow night on Friday. And let's be honest here, they didn't do that well offensively in Ottawa, but home is where the heart is, and the Montreal Canadiens have been a hell of a lot better there than elsewhere. So you expect a bigger showing from them, and let's just work things out. They have a better record. They are winning hockey games. Like I said, they have a 3-1 record in the series right now. They won 50 games in the regular season. 50 wins in 82 regular season games, and still we had complaints nonstop.
Oh, you're always going to have complaints in Montreal. Nobody's ever complacent here, no matter what happens. I mean, they expect the teams of the 70s and early 80s to show up with the likes of the Guy Lafleurs and, you know, later on the Stéphane Richer's. Montreal's not like that anymore. We don't have that talent on this team. It's a team effort from top to bottom. Your top six is where you have your most skilled players. Your bottom six is where you have the guys that are, you know, the pit lunch pail guys.
But it's not a formula. It's not A plus B plus C equals D, in that the top two lines will score, the bottom two lines will check, the defense will cover everybody's asses, and that's how you get a win. Some nights, the formula works entirely backwards, and it's kind of fun because we've seen that with the Montreal Canadiens. You got to look elsewhere in the NHL right now, too. We've got a couple games on as we do the show live tonight. The NHL playoff picture is a lot muddier than we thought it would be, with some teams upending the table on others, like the Detroit Red Wings right now holding a 2-0 lead in the third period over the Tampa Bay Lightning. They win this one, they're taking a 3-1 series lead back to becoming an awfully interesting dilemma between the middle of the pack teams differentiating themselves from the top and the bottom, and that's what parity has brought to the playoffs. It's a lot of fun. It's a different situation for some of these teams, but again, you got to bring the focus back to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, the complaints, how they got there, hindsight is 20/20, my friend. You know that very well.
All too well.
And the bottom line is, if they're all wins, let's complain till the cows come home, okay? Because I don't have a problem with that. If we're going to pick on, you know, small details, that's fine. Big picture, they definitely have it under control. And the Ottawa Senators are the ones who are certainly leaving themselves exposed, vulnerable. They've had to make a lot of changes, and as Pierre Maguire likes to point out, the seeds have been planted. Fear, doubt, concern. Well, I think the Senators are fearing for their playoff lives now, and the Canadiens simply just have to put them out of their misery in Game 5.
Again, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week 2 Radio Network. Kostas Papoulias and Stephen Hindle. Let's take a little bit of a look at the Ottawa Senators themselves. Andrew Hammond out of the series, Craig Anderson in. Your thoughts on them so far?
Well, I think Andrew Hammond hit the wall, as everybody hoped and expected that he would do. But the bottom line is that the Senators have been reaching deep, emotionally ravaged from their end-of-season run. And on the other side of it, the playoffs are a cruel beast. And the Montreal Canadiens, through the first three games of the series, didn't look at all like the team the Senators had faced in the regular season. So things change very fast in the playoffs. Dave Cameron's lineup changes have certainly been a reflection of that. The Canadiens know how to handle it. Michel Therrien has the experience here on this one. And, you know, just like a bad cough, the Senators have got to get it under control. Is it too late for them, though? I firmly believe so, because the Montreal Canadiens haven't shown an ounce of fear. The sweat on their brows comes from hard work and not panic about what Ottawa is going to do.
Yeah, that's true enough. And if you look at the Ottawa Senators, of course, a big part of this series was a slash on Mark Stone. And let's say Hockey Night in Canada's continued bias, where they keep talking about Mark Stone's inability to shoot. Between you and me, I've seen him shoot the puck quite a bit. He's been making good passes. I don't know what they're talking about, or I don't know what they're seeing, but they have to stop doing this. Hockey Night in Canada, you would think that they would be pro-Canadian teams. Doesn't matter what colors they're wearing. Obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs are out. The Winnipeg Jets are now out. You've got four Canadian teams left. The end of the first round, you may just have two or three. I mean, they've got to get their heads out of the clouds. Steve, it's been an ongoing thing. We thought when CBC dropped the ball and Rogers Sportsnet picked it up, that it would stop and they would start being a little bit more
effective. Come on, you and I both know that George Stramboulopoulos has been on an island by himself start of the season. He understands that he still has to do his job and is trying, as that clearly appears to be on occasion. You just got to swallow it. The Montreal Canadiens are the most storied franchise in the NHL. They have the most Stanley Cup wins. They got the most rings. Sure, it's been a long time, but the swagger the team carries, especially in comparison to all 29 other teams, whether they're the reigning Cup champs or not, still doesn't compare.
But is that a reason for Canadian networks especially to show such a huge bias? Glenn Healy, notorious for his hate for the Montreal Canadiens, is between the benches for this series. How much sense does that even begin to make?
Listen, my friend, you want to talk about sense? When was the last time you saw Cameron Diaz in a Montreal Canadiens uniform?
Do we really have to bring that up?
Let's bring it up because you're asking for perspective.
And we'll clear this up for our listeners who are south of the 49th.
Sure, absolutely.
Where Glenn Healy was making a reference to Rafael Diaz.
Traded for Dale Weiss.
Exactly, after Dale Weiss scored the overtime goal and said that he was traded for Cameron Diaz. And Aaron Ward of TSN, a couple of days later, turned around and said, you know what, I wouldn't have made that trade. I wouldn't have traded for Cameron Diaz either. I'd have kept her on my team any day.
Listen, I can't argue. Sounds about as quality a prospect as you can get, okay? Cameron Diaz should be in my lineup any night, but the bottom line is they are a distraction. They're a circus, whether you want to look at it through the eyes of professional journalism, where responsibility and integrity once had merit.
Objectivity.
In this industry. Sure, but respect for the team you cover, the team you follow, the opponents they face, and the management, staff, coaches, players on both sides. In today's day and age, that is no longer a standard, and it's no longer a priority. So the CBC sideshow, the Sportsnet extension of quality, which leads to, you guessed it, quantity over exactly what I just said, quality. Well, you can see why people have something to complain about. And sure, the Montreal Canadiens, maybe they could use somebody on their side behind the mic covering the games for them, but they don't need that. Just to finish them off. The emotional energy the Ottawa Senators have spent in the first few games, and you could see it in Game 4, 1-0 win. Craig Anderson did everything he could to avoid the scenario that played itself out in Game 3. And now the Habs, they've got destiny in control, I rather than say it in their hands. But look, it's fun. It's fun because it's only the beginning, round one, and so much is happening. Things are kind of flying off the hook in the NHL right now, even when the Capitals are taking a 4-1 lead over the Islanders in the third period of Game 5 in that series. That's going to break things open. Some of these teams now in best of threes. Well, the Montreal Canadiens have a best of three, but all they need to do is win one. So let's just be honest here. Distractions, sideshows. The Canadiens need to just pot a couple more goals and let Carey Price be Carey Price, as he has done oh so well. Once again, four games, goals against average, under two. He's going to do it for the Habs. The rest of the team's got to step up and follow suit.
Okay, so let's, with a couple of minutes left here in this segment, let's take a quick look at the Canadiens up and down the lineup. We'll talk about the top line. When you're looking at Desharnais, Pacioretty just coming back after Game 1, having suffered an injury late in the season, and Brendan Gallagher. David Desharnais has been fantastic so far in this series. He hasn't been able to put any points on the board, but he's been working his tail off, especially along the half wall. Brendan Gallagher doing his thing in front of the net and trying to get in the Ottawa goaltender's faces. What can Max Pacioretty do now? If he's not going to be physical, he's got to start putting points on the board.
Well, that's just a matter of his teammates providing him the right spaces on the ice to find his rhythm and groove again. And, you know, reports are that he's starting to look a little bit better. He's flying better in practice. The step is seemingly a half step faster. And with Max Pacioretty, that can make all the difference in the world. Look, it's just got to click. You can't rely on David Desharnais as a playoff performer. His statistics in the postseason prove that his reliance is weak at best. Brendan Gallagher, well, he would be the complete opposite of Desharnais, wouldn't he, Costa? Because let's be honest, he's a model of consistency.
Absolutely.
Always in the right place at the right time, whether he gets a penalty or not. He's doing the dirty work three or four other guys should be doing in his place. As a result, he's invaluable to this team in the job and what he's done. And some of the other guys, maybe your Devontae Smith-Pellys and your Dale Weises and your Flynns and Mitchells, and the story goes on. Brandon Prust has been fantastic
in the series.
True leader on the bench, in the room, but making a difference on the ice, spurring some of these other guys to step on up.
And before we go to break, let's talk a little bit about the second line, because that line's been much maligned. When you look at Devontae Smith-Pelly on that line, along with Thomas Pekanex and Alex Gauthier, was that the line?
No. You got them mixed up.
I got them
Smith-Pelly was skating with Desharnais and Pacioretty.
Correct. Gallagher was with...
Smith-Pelly's been playing very well. He hasn't had the opportunity to pot a couple goals, which would help sway oh so much of the Canadiens fan base in his favor. But I believe he had something like 14 hits through three games going into Game 4. Throwing his weight around, he's got a lot of block shots, he's got a lot of shots on net, and he's creating space. You were just talking about Max Pacioretty. He simply got to take advantage of the space that Devontae Smith-Pelly is providing. Think of it as being winter. Smith-Pelly is the snowplow. Pacioretty's just got to find that clean space behind the path that Smith-Pelly is creating to take advantage of it and pot a couple goals for the Habs.
Now, finally, with Gallagher, you've got Thomas Pekanex and Alex Galchenyuk, two guys that, okay, Alex Galchenyuk got the game winner in Game 2 in Montreal in overtime, but when you look at his overall play, he's been trying out there, he has been pulling his trigger on the shot, and Thomas Pekanex, despite his effort in Game 1, he's disappeared.
A bit more invisible than you want to see out of these guys. Like I said, Gallagher always there, always in place, consistent. Galchenyuk there at the right time, but he's been otherwise invisible, and you know what, I'll compare Pekanex to Andre Markov. These guys just seem to find a rhythm of struggle at times, especially in playoffs. Pekanex will get it back together, Markov too, but it seems to take them a while, and I don't know what it is. Bottom line is they've got to pick it up for the top line to be able to pick it up. They can't leave it to the third and fourth lines for the rest of the playoffs, but that is the beauty of rolling four lines deep for the Montreal Canadiens, depth supporting them when they need it most.
Time for a break now. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. I'm Coach K. Costa-Popolios. He's Stephen Hindle. We'll be back after this.
With more Breaking Habs Radio. Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Boneless Buffalo Wing Inventor.
Mr. Boneless Buffalo Wing Inventor.
How do you improve upon a meat that is breaded, buttered, double fried, and dipped in blue cheese dressing? Remove the only part that doesn't contain fat.
Don't need no chicken bone.
Gone now is the race to eat the drumsticks first, leaving the wings for the other poor suckers.
Hands off my drumming!
Is it leg? Is it wing? Is it rear end? Now every chunk is as identical as it is indistinguishable.
Hope I'm not eating rear end.
Because we don't have a bone to pick with you.
Teenage girls, are you still a virgin? Ever consider chastity? The first time it should be special, but do you really want some drunken high school football player or frat boy that don't know what the hell they are doing to take it away? A recent survey says 69% of women were disappointed with their first time. No, I'm not with any religious group. I'm with American Chastity Investments. Do you realize you're literally sitting on a gold mine? Virginity is in high demand, as it is a rare commodity. A recent story says that your virginity can be worth up to $3.8 million. Here at ACI, we make sure you get the best return on your investment. Our team of gynecologists are there to make sure our clients get what they pay for. Have you already lost it? Never fear, as our two plastic surgeons will give you back your virginity. So next time your boyfriend asks for sex, just say no, because you want to save it for your financial future. Remember, at American Chastity Investments, you get paid for your first lay. Call 1-877-VIRGIN. That's 1-877-VIRGIN. 20. Deals must happen in Nevada. 21 years or age or older to cash an offer. Profits vary depending on age and loans. Male virginity not offered. Facts may not be factual. Single Peak Comedy Club does not condone you. You'll wait a million.
Now, back to Breaking Habs Radio.
Back to a little bit of Knight Rider here on Breaking Habs Radio. I'm Costa Popolios along with Stephen Hindle, and it's time for us to bring in our guest from Hamilton, covering the Bulldogs, Mr. Reed Duffy. Reed, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. What a pleasure it is to be here with you guys. I never thought that I'd be able to see the day, but you've brought a Bruins fan onto Breaking Habs Radio, and now Bruins fans and Habs fans are united in some sort of unholy alliance against the Ottawa Senators. So it feels like the world is all turning around here in a funny way.
Yeah, it is. You know, we can't stand the Senators. I mean, it's just the way it is around here.
I like to think of it as the making of Ghostbusters 3.
Reed?
I'd like to see that.
Oh, my God.
The end of the world as we know it.
That was the first segment.
You know what? I'm very interested to see how long it lasts, because obviously it's one thing for it to continue at the onset of the playoffs. And, you know, our sympathies, Reed, Bruins fans everywhere right now. Listen, Boston dealt themselves their own fate this year. There wasn't anything the opponents had to do with it. So we can't take too much pleasure out of seeing the Bruins out of the playoffs outside of the usual happiness that we have in that they're not there. But it's not fun to watch, but I'm sure teaming up against the opposition, it makes things a little easier, doesn't it?
Well, definitely, and I'm kind of lucky in a way that I get a little bit of reprieve being from Hamilton, that I get to see a lot of the guys who have come up through the system with the Habs go from the Bulldogs, where I covered them or cheered for them before that as a fan, go on to the Montreal Canadiens and see them do some great things. I mean, I remember when P.K. Subban and Carey Price were here in Hamilton, and it was a really funny situation because I knew the two guys who I was going full bore for in that playoff run were soon going to be haunting my black and gold. And sure enough, that came to happen, but Hamilton got a Calder Cup out of that. So I think it all balances out in the end.
It absolutely does. Now, let's get into talking a little bit more about the Bulldogs. Of course, for those of you that don't know, the Bulldogs in their last AHL season, they'll be moving to St. John's to become the Ice Caps, while the Belleville Bulls will be moving to Hamilton to become the Bulldogs, as confusing as that can be. But Reid, taking a look at the end of the season for the Bulldogs, they dropped their last two games, one in Cleveland and, of course, the last one in Hamilton, both to the Lake Erie Monsters. Overall, what's your assessment of the Bulldogs' season so far this year, I should say, so far?
There was a lot of hope coming into this season that when they saw that Marty St. Pierre was leaving and he was headed back to the KHL, and they brought in T.J. Hensick, and you saw some of the additions that the Habs added when we figured out that Eric Tangrady would be spending some time in Hamilton, Drayson Bowman would spend some time in Hamilton, Jakob De La Rose decided to make the move over from Europe. There were some people who thought this year's edition of the Bulldogs was going to be one of the teams that was going to fight for a playoff spot, not just at the bottom, but probably somewhere in the middle of the standing. So in that sense, it was disappointing. It was nice to see some of the young guys really make an impact. Charles Hudon was incredible this season. What a pleasure it was to cover his games. But the last two games of the season specifically, the second last game, the one in Cleveland, might have been the biggest letdown. You get out to a 2-0 lead before giving up five straight goals in a game you needed to win. And Mike Condon, who might have been the biggest revelation on the Bulldogs, was the guy who was in net for four of them. That was kind of the full end of the Bulldogs season. Everything kind of came back full circle on that one.
Reid, you know what? We've got a listener calling in. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio. This is Coach K. Who's calling?
Hi, it's guess who?
Roy in Bangkok, one of our listeners from Montreal Hockey Talk. How you doing, Roy?
Oh, we're all stumbling along on a bright, sunny morning here.
You got a question for Reid? Or you just felt like interrupting my interview?
I just felt like interrupting your interview adding a little flow, you know?
Well, what's your assessment of the Bulldogs so Reid can hear it?
I think that mismanaged, but, lots of potential. I don't think they've got the right coach there to develop young players, but, my feeling on the coaching staff of the Montreal Canadiens is not a secret. So, I think they need somebody there who can develop players, not just stick to a system.
We'll let Reid answer that one, okay, Roy? Thanks a lot for the call, man.
No drama.
That, of course, Roy in Bangkok. Why don't you tell us about the coaching staff? What's your assessment of them?
I think you made a great point. Now, this one is really tough for me because in covering the Bulldogs, I got to know Sylvain Lefebvre, and I got to say, personally, I'm a big fan of him. X's and O's, I'm a big fan of him. I think there is some truth to that. I don't know that he was ready for the challenge that he was going to get in terms of the makeup of the roster. There's a lot of AHL teams, and, there's one just up the road in Toronto that likes to load up with quite a lot of veterans to make runs every year. And for a team like that, Coach Lefebvre probably would have been the perfect guy, a team that needs the X's and O's in place. Montreal used the Hamilton Bulldogs the way an AHL team has been set up over the years to be used. They use them to develop players. And I think as an assistant, learning his way up would have been a better spot for Sylvain. I thought he did an admirable job as the coach. I think as he develops as a coach, you're going to see him eventually move up the ladder, either an assistant or maybe down the line a head coach somewhere in the National Hockey League. But I don't think he was the right guy for this time with this roster.
You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. We've got Reid Duffy on the line, who's covered the Bulldogs all season. I'm here, of course. I'm Costa Papoulias, along with Stephen Hindle. Steve?
Yeah, hey, Reid. Glad to talk to you. And, I got to follow along the Bulldogs rather closely myself. I formed a partnership with them through one of the companies that I run, and it's a lot of fun to see the inner workings of the Bulldog staff, because a lot of fans take for granted what goes on behind the scenes, who the Bulldogs really are, and what makes them great. And I got to say that for as much of the struggle that there was in Hamilton sometimes on the ice with the product, and you know, we'll get back to the coaching staff in just a second, I think a lot of kudos and compliments need to go to the community, but most especially the staff behind the scenes for the job they do. I'm sure you got to know quite a few of them rather well over the years. So in terms of the shift between all of the teams coming and going and the Bulldogs going to Newfoundland and Belleville coming to Hamilton, what are you most looking forward to out of the entire experience of this change? And of course, the Hamilton Bulldogs are going to be there next year. Are you hoping to factor into those plans as well?
That's a decision that's going to be made rather shortly. It looks like the local cable station here that I've worked for the last, we're coming towards 7.5 years now, where I've done play-by-play and hosted and done the interviews for the Hamilton Bulldogs in the AHL. They're going to cover, it looks like, every home game of the OHL Bulldogs. And I know I'm at the top of the list, and I hope that I'll have an announcement rather soon to make as to whether I will be officially named the television play-by-play announcer on the OHL Action Pack for that team. So I'm very much hoping to be involved with the team as it moves forward. I'm looking forward to seeing how the city responds to the OHL. I think one problem that the Bulldogs had, and you nailed it right on with saying that it's an organization of great people, and I'll name one, Justin Dickey, who did a lot of the media coordination for the Bulldogs, one of the nicest guys I've ever gotten the pleasure to work with. I don't know if he's staying with the Montreal organization or if he's going to work with the OHL side. I wish him the very best with whatever he decides to do. It was a pleasure working with his entire department in their tenure there. I think that part of the issue that the Bulldogs had in this edition was that they were Montreal's team in Hamilton, not Hamilton's team.
There you go. That makes all the sense in the world, which also makes sense in the decision to split up how this situation was playing itself. Yeah, I was just following up on your comment about Hamilton and the community embracing it, and obviously being the OHL and the connection to the community being a bit stronger with homegrown boys, I guess the idea would be to grab more of the kids coming out of the system in the local areas to boost the community appeal and obviously their participation.
Absolutely. I think you're going to see that as it goes along. Their first OHL draft, they've targeted guys from between Hamilton and Toronto, and I don't think that was any coincidence that a lot of the guys that they've picked up to add into this roster, their parents live somewhere about an hour away in any general direction, and I think that's really going to have an impact when it comes to promoting this team.
All right, let's get back to talking about those former AHL Bulldogs and the Montreal Canadiens prospects, because that's what a lot of our listeners are very keen on finding out about. Daniel Carr. Now, you talked about Charlie Hudon and his spectacular season, and under the guise of what was clearly unimpressive product development from Sylvain Lefebvre, according to many fans and many critics, you still had the likes of Charlie Hudon and Daniel Carr flourishing. Talk a little bit about Daniel Carr's scoring touch, and what do you project from this player moving forward? NHL possibilities in his future?
Absolutely. He was one of the guys I was going to point out that I was most impressed with this season. Really, when I started doing some background for this year, I wasn't sure what we were going to see out of a Daniel Carr, but this kid, he's a pure shooter. He's a pure shooter. It's the best way to put it. He had 24 goals in 75 games played as an AHL rookie. You don't just put up those kind of numbers without having some serious talent to back it up. And when you watch him play, he plays fearless. He plays strong on the puck. He'll throw the body. He likes to get in and mix it up. I think he's got great potential moving forward. I would stay away from saying top six, but I think as the Habs move forward and they kind of transition into using a bit of a gritty bottom six that's got some scoring talent there, Daniel Carr fits that mold like a glove.
Now, we're going to talk about the one guy who's been much maligned here in Montreal, and that's a guy by the name of Jared Tenorti. We've listened a lot to his dad. We flap his gums about how Jared should be in Montreal. Now, Jared underwent surgery on his wrist April 20th. He's not available to the Canadiens for the playoffs because of that, but do you think he's actually NHL ready? Because when Steve and I were in Hamilton and we watched those two games on that weekend, we weren't too impressed with his play at the AHL level.
How PG do I have to be on this show?
Pretty PG.
Stop listening to your dad.
I don't have a beep. So, you know.
Fair enough. Stop. If you're Jared Tenorti, stop listening to your dad. Stop getting into your own head. That's his biggest thing. He keeps thinking, I should be there, I should be there, I should be there. He's got all the potential in the world. For a big guy, he can skate. He thinks the game well, to the point actually where at times you see him overthink the game, and that gets him into some trouble. His biggest weakness is still his puck handling. For people who watched the Habs dismantle the Bruins at the end of the playoffs last year, think of Adam McQuaid. The puck on his stick looks like a hand grenade. And that's where Tenorti's had his biggest problems. But if he could get his head screwed on straight, get pointed in the right direction, he's got a lot of talent, and he is tough. He will go with anybody, anywhere, anytime, and be very happy to do it. I think he's probably going to move on from the Montreal organization. I think you're going to be surprised in that Montreal will get something decent out of him, because I am guaranteeing you there are organizations who I know of that like Jared Tenorti a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely got a great deal of appeal to many other NHL organizations, which is where fans, as is tradition in Montreal, are getting pretty fickle about why he hasn't graduated, along with guys like Greg Patterson and Nathan Beaulieu. But to each their own, everybody's got their own development scale. And you know what, Reed, fingers crossed, and we're with you on this one, hoping the development. Same thing applying to Daniel Carr here. What do you think about Mike Condon's evolution as a player this year? Clearly, he's not jumping anywhere next year. He needs a little bit more experience. But what do you think this goaltender has the potential to do? And let's just ask the question, should Dustin Tokarski be worried about anything in the near future?
Did you stutter on purpose?
Maybe, just maybe.
Don't worry, I've done it on the air before. It'll happen at times. Mike Condon, he's an interesting story. 2.44 goals against to go with a 921 save percentage. He saw a lot of pucks. He handled it very well, positionally very sound. He can make the scramble saves. He can do a lot of things at the upper levels when you look at goaltending skill. He still has the tendency to let up the softy here and there, but that can be corrected over time. Does Dustin Tokarski have anything to worry about? No. His biggest worry is a trade. If he feels like he should be a number one goaltender, then Montreal will obviously move him along. Mike Condon could be a very capable back. I mean, look, you could put any one of the three of us as a backup for Carey Price, and the Montreal Canadiens are going to have an above 500 record. It's just the way it is. Carey Price is the best goaltender on the planet.
Yeah, that's for sure. Reed, our time's up, man. But it's been great talking to you. We'll do it again. We'll call you next season as you take care of the new Hamilton Bulldogs. Hopefully you get that gig, because Steve and I would love to listen to you online, because you've got the greatest voice in the world for play-by-play. And that's coming from somebody who does play-by-play himself. So take it as a compliment.
Okay? I appreciate that. I appreciate that so much. I really do. It's been an honor to be on with you guys. I really can't wait to do it again.
All right, great, Reed. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, you too.
That's Reed Duffy from Hamilton talking about the Bulldogs with me and Steve. Of course, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. Time for us to take another break. When we come back, we're going to take a look around the league a little bit and talk about the different series, Steve, and we're going to make it a lot of fun. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. We'll be back.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Hello, ladies. Press down on the gas pedal of forever life happiness, and let's ride into the future together. Look to your left. Cars. Look to your right. Cars. Wait, what's that behind you?
Me.
The man your man could smell like.
Shh. Don't say it.
I already know how rough your day was. Which is why I'm back here massaging your tired yet elegantly toned shoulders on which you carry the weight of the world. Quietly.
Gracefully.
Relax yourself!
As I move to your left, which is truly your most beautiful profile, even more beautiful than your right side could possibly be, I was wrong.
Everyone makes mistakes!
Except your parents when they made your face.
I'm running circles around it! Collecting all the nice and thoughtful things you've always wanted and deserved, but never received, but could have received, had your man smelled like the man your man could smell like.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank most of the folks on 4, 6, 7, and 12. Spent a little time on each of those floors, usually moving up or down after some company acquired the company that acquired us. I honestly don't even know what company I'm retiring from anymore, but I do know that I'm happy to retire from it. Without some planning and a little help, I could have been stuck in the soul-stealing, miserable, mismanaged corporate torture chamber for who knows how many more years, instead of retiring today. Thank you. I'm out.
You work hard. Our investment advisors help you plan for your retirement by listening to your goals and investing accordingly. And that's just the beginning. We keep watching your investments and keep listening to you. So let us help start building your retirement today. Let's put your life's work to work.
Now, back to Breaking Habs Radio.
I see trouble coming there.
Born for a fight as we watch the playoffs unroll. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. I'm Costa Papoulias along with Stephen Hindle. Steve, we were watching on the screen before the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders, a tussle between those two teams. That series has gone the way of the Capitals now with their victory tonight.
A 5-1 victory from the Washington Capitals over the struggling New York Islanders, who were the better team heading into it, in my opinion. But it seems the Capitals just have the answer for what the Islanders are dishing out. A 5-1 win tonight. That's a pretty hefty beatdown. You want to talk about beatdowns? You look at what the Blues did to the Minnesota Wild last night.
Oh, yeah.
Game 4, after losing Game 3, 3-0 to the hands of Devan Dubnyk and the Wild, getting shut out on home ice, I might add. They were in Minnesota. So the comeback game, a 6-1 win. Well, the Washington Capitals managed to lay the beat down tonight as well on home ice, beating the Islanders 5-1 and just really kind of destroying them. They outshot them 41-23. The Islanders opened the scoring 5.5 or so minutes into the first period. The Capitals got it back and never turned around, never looked back. It was a demolishment in all sense of the word. On the other side of it, well, the other teams doing battle tonight, well, they are doing just that. They are in a heated battle. It looked like Mike Babcock had put whatever he needed to into Peter Mrazek's drink to get the Red Wings going. They had a 2-0 lead in the third period. What's going on with that now, Coach?
It's tied at 2-2 going into overtime. And, you know, Tampa Bay, they have that quick strike offense, the ability to get back into a hockey game. And sure enough, they did it tonight against Detroit. Detroit on the verge of taking a 3-1 stranglehold on a series. But they let it slip away, and now they're going to have to try and win that one in overtime. Let's look away from the Eastern Conference for a second. Let's take a look out west, where Vancouver's taking on the Calgary Flames, and Calgary is just looking fantastic in that series, Steve. No more is Eddie Lack in goal for the Vancouver Canucks tonight. They're making the switch over to Ryan Miller. Do you think that's going to help Vancouver?
Maybe.
Talk about sitting on that fence.
You've caught me there in sort of a question of, do I care about the Vancouver Canucks? And quite frankly, they're a team that have driven me from having any interest in the way that they've handled all of their affairs. Switching from Eddie Lack to Ryan Miller at this time of year, sure, Miller was hurt for a long time. They were saying Lack was the guy, because he stood in there long enough. Let's be honest, it was always Ryan Miller. Had to be that way. But Vancouver, these guys are just cursed for the way they treat goaltenders. And the Calgary Flames, Bob Hartley, Rookie of the Year candidate, Johnny Gaudreau. How about Sam Bennett?
Sean Monahan.
TJ Brody. All, might I add, without Mark Giordano.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the Flames. I love what they're doing. I love what Hartley's done. I love watching them. They're young. They're upbeat. They're fast. They're physical. Quite frankly, this is the team the Canadians should be scared of right now, and so should the rest of the West. It's kind of interesting. Lest we forget, it was only 3 years ago the LA Kings entered the playoffs as the eighth seed.
And Calgary playing a very similar game to LA.
And they are exactly right there, eighth seed. So it's a lot of fun to consider what might come. They've got control of this right now, and you've got game number 5 taking place in only a few short minutes, as when we hop off the air, you will be able to tune in and catch game 5. Might just be an elimination game as the Flames look to end it all right now.
Yeah, that's definitely a game nobody wants to miss, because the action in that game is fantastic. Let's take a look now over at another series that's piqued everybody's interest, and that's the one between the Pittsburgh Penguins and, why am I drawing a blank?
New York Rangers.
Thank you. The Rangers, yeah.
Because it's a blank series. No, you know what?
In honor of Paul Cuthbert.
Well, in honor of Dr. Doofen, in honor of the absolutely bland Pittsburgh Penguins, the flightless birds, what they have been unable to accomplish in terms of the expectations that are placed on them, it's a joke right now. The Rangers have it easy, okay? I just want to throw that out there. The Canadians, you know, sure, the Sens were the favorites and the Habs were the underdogs. The Canadians were always the better team. It was just a matter of the series playing out. Everybody knew the Rangers were the better team. The Penguins have turned into a wild card. Who are you going to see one night to the next?
But the Penguins aren't necessarily a team anymore, because other than Crosby and Malkin, they've been depleted on the wings completely. I mean, Chris Kunitz is not having the season that he had a year ago that got him his spot on the Olympic team. You look at their defense, and their defense is, without Chris Letang, is absolutely useless. And then there's the spotty goaltending of Marc-Andre Fleury. It's not so much the team, and I'm not going to put this on their coach. This is more along the lines of the fact that they went out and they hired Jim Rutherford as the general manager of that team. He's lost touch with what this league is doing. You saw that in Carolina, and now he brings that ineptitude to Pittsburgh, and that's hurting that franchise more than anything else.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Good point made by one of our good friends, Tony Healy, listening in, making the statement about the Penguins having absolutely no defense. Well, that's called the injured list right there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of guys out, and a lot of the meat and potatoes of what made them valuable on the back end is absolutely gone, plus the loss of Evgeny Malkin. I mean, talk about sucking the soul out of a player. He's a guy who doesn't want to be there anymore. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it. You know what? I am very excited to watch them blow this thing up, because I think the Penguins dynasty and the run that was to be has hit the skids right here. I think the Capitals have a better chance of living up to the future of having a dynasty with their team in terms of the difference of the mold right now. But you know what? The other series, I'm very interested in switching right on over back to the West, Nashville and Chicago, because like with Calgary and Vancouver, this is a series where the quote-unquote favorite team or the top-ranked team Well, they were the underdog.
Yeah, that's
we didn't think the Canucks were going to be all that strong, and we certainly had an inkling the Flames were going to be good against them. Maybe not 3-1 series lead, potential to kill them off in five. But I will say the Chicago Blackhawks, especially when they got the return of Patrick Kane, five games beating the Nashville Predators, that does not surprise me in the slightest.
Not at all. Of course, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio here on Hockey This Week to a radio network. I'm Costa Papoulias along with Steve Hindle. And as we're talking about the Hawks, that marathon game the other night going three overtime periods, Brent Seabrook, once again, the hero in overtime. He has a habit of doing that. And you know,
it's funny
again.
You say that, Duncan Keith, the hero in overtime the other night. So it's the quality, it's the experience, it's the been there, done that factor, and the rested factor. The Blackhawks weren't exactly continuously factoring into the race for the President's Trophy, the top of the Western Conference. Of course, the Kane injury threw a lot
off. Hot and cold season.
But they're still there. They're still that team. And with Patrick Kane back, Marian Hossa, Patrick Sharp, Jonathan Toews, Toews just grasping that leadership role again. And for everything that it's been worth in Nashville, this wonderful regular season, it's something to build on. But they don't yet have the pieces offensively to match their opponents right now. But it's nice to see a Philip Forsberg lighting it up. It's amazing to see Roman Josi, Shea Weber injured right now. A big reason the Predators had trouble against the Blackhawks is he got injured.
Yeah.
But the youngster Seth Jones, it's a good story, but it's not their time for the happy ending. The experienced Hawks are, well, let's just be honest, they're only 5 minutes in to Game 5, and it's 0-0, so it could end tonight, but it's looking favorable that the Hawks will finish off the Predators.
It's got to look good because, you know, Barry Trotz gone now with the Capitals, and Peter Laviolette has done a fantastic job with his coaching staff in changing the whole atmosphere around the Nashville Predators. You know, the influx of talent. You've got Mike Ribeiro that went there, of course. In mentioning the Penguins before, we were remiss to say that James Neal ended up in Nashville as well. A lot of different offensive players that were put in there to complement guys like Seth Jones on the back end and Shea Weber. And then up front, you look at guys like, you know, Mike Fisher, who, you know, he's been carrying that team on his back man alone for the last couple of years.
Understanding, too, the guys in Nashville people don't really know, like Craig Smith, who makes an invaluable difference for the offense up there. And youngsters who are starting to come out of the world. I said Philip Forsberg already, but you know what? He tailed off towards the end of the season, and some of these young guys have difficulty adjusting to the full 82-game campaign plus playoffs. So it takes a while, but they're on the right track. And like I said, it just evolution-wise, you expect to see more of the Nashville Predators in the future. This is more of a Blackhawks kind of time. So, you know, I was one with Pierre LeBrun's idea that the Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens might be destined to meet in the Stanley Cup Finals. And right now I'm not seeing anything that's changing my opinion in agreeing with that statement.
True enough, yeah. Pierre LeBrun, of course, changed his own mind in picking the Senators here in the first round.
Yeah, well, you know what? It doesn't matter, though, because...
Of course it does. Montreal, Chicago in the final, and then you pick Ottawa to beat Montreal.
Yeah, everybody can jump on his back, but this is what I appreciate about it. The season prediction, what he called at the beginning of the year, was an unbiased assessment of all teams prior to playing.
True.
His call of the Senators beating the Canadiens in a 7-game series... perhaps more biased over how the end of the season finished than what the overall picture painted. So I stick to the overall picture because his call still has two of the top five teams in the NHL meeting in the finals this year. Now, it's a long way to go. Round one, only game five's happening tonight. So, hey, tune in, stay with us. We're hoping for a long run, hopefully right into the summer days, especially if we can get a window cracked in here, and we'll try and stay on air as long as we can possibly do it.
Absolutely, and with a couple of minutes left in the show, the NHL today announcing the nominees for the Rookie of the Year Calder Trophy, and that would be Aaron Ekblad of the Florida Panthers, Johnny Gaudreau of the Calgary Flames, and of course, Mark Stone,
and
the man we love to hate from the Ottawa Senators.
Funny, too, how we just finished talking about Philip Forsberg, who was destined to win it, destined to be the top nominee, but tailed off and didn't find himself in that group. Aaron Ekblad, for all of its for all that it's worth, deserves it.
Yeah.
He embodies the rookie of the year for who he is. I mean, this guy is going to be a Chris Pronger-esque type of defenseman when he grows into his size. 18, going on 19, I believe he came in somewhere near 40 points as a rookie defenseman. Astounding. But is he going to win it? I don't think so. And I don't think so because...
Because he plays for the Panthers.
Well, he didn't make the playoffs. That's a tough one, and we always get into the humming and the hawing. And the, because if you don't make the playoffs, are you really necessarily as valuable as another guy who helped his team do that? And Johnny Gaudreau and Mark Stone are those two guys who did exactly that. Mark Stone, the leading scorer in the NHL from January 1st to the end of the regular season. How do you discount him as the rookie of the year? Well, I think it's pretty simple. Johnny Gaudreau. From game one through game 82, he made a difference. From the moment he started in November making a difference, it continued through, helping them right till when? Games 81 and 82 when they clinched a playoff spot. And if you want to turn around and look right now, a factor in game number four to push them in their 3-1 series lead.
And that's not to say we're taking anything away from the accomplishments of Mark Stone. He did it at the end of the season when the Ottawa Senators needed it the most. But we're talking about a trophy that merited to the guys that played 82 games and were a factor on the team. Aaron Ekblad, a stalwart on defense for the Florida Panthers.
And let's be honest, it's more of a checkbox situation with Rookie of the Year in terms of the accomplishments and their weights. And you said it. Make the playoffs, be a difference, contribute consistently through 82 games. Philip Forsberg, game 45-50, started to tail off. Aaron Ekblad did everything he could, but the team didn't make the playoffs. Mark Stone, from halfway towards the end, was great. Johnny Gaudreau, he seems to be the one who gets all the boxes checked.
And like you said, you know, you're saying it's probably going to go to Gaudreau because they made the playoffs. But here's the thing, and here's my determining factor in all of this, is the fact that, yeah, Johnny Gaudreau, they're calling him Johnny Hockey. He's trying to brand it. You know, he's a young kid who's doing all kinds of magic stuff. But Aaron Ekblad, with what he's done in Florida, not only is he put himself in the running for the Rookie of the Year and the Calder Trophy, but he's established a reputation in just a single year. To me, that's the most impressive thing that a player can do in his rookie season. It remains to be seen whether or not he can do it in the sophomore year. But that being said, my pick for the Rookie of the Year, it's got to be Aaron Ekblad.
You know what? I think the best part is all of these guys, they're going to be contributing players for their teams moving forward. That's what you love to see about a rookie class. Guys that stay, guys that last. Alex Galchenyuk, he's the best player in the NHL right now in his rookie class. Got to see him start to make that impact too.
Absolutely, Steve. An hour goes by really quick. And, you know, another fantastic show. Of course, we have to thank Reed Dudley
for
joining us because his input was fantastic today.
Yeah, he turned the slow-flowing water of this show into slick ice, and time passed ever too quickly. Very happy to have him on.
Slow-flowing water? We're better than that, I think.
I think we're more like some rapids. So watch your heads, wear a helmet, and keep your hands and arms inside the vessel at all times.
Absolutely. We'll be back again next week, I believe, on Wednesday, because the Canadians will not be playing on Wednesday night. So Wednesday, 9 p.m. for Stephen Hindle. I'm Coach K. Costa-Pupulias. Thank you for joining us on Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week 2 Radio Network.
We'll be back soon. Take care, everybody. I'm not sure.